Welcome to Epic People. We're a global community of researchers and innovators doing ethnography for impact in businesses and organizations. In this series, we're focusing on reflections as we celebrate 20 years of ethnographic practice. My name is Dustin Kiskaden. I'm an applied ethnographer, book author, and your audio producer. This episode is part two of a two-part conversation between Martha Cotton, Rick Robinson, and Tony Salvador. We begin with Martha asking Tony about responsibility, and with Tony citing the keynote from Rick discussing who is involved in this conversation in the first place. Now let's hear from Martha, Rick, and Tony.
Rereading your keynote, you talked a lot about responsibility. Have our responsibilities changed in any way or grown?
I would like to just echo a little bit the first keynote, you know, Rick's keynote there. Having that conversation is itself a bit of responsibility, right? Sort of enacting that responsibility is sort of taking theoretical practices, theories rather, and then applying them in practice. I think that there is a responsibility that we have. And I think it's actually the responsibility has grown and I believe that, you know, people are taking it seriously as well. So I think both have grown. I think one of them is probably growing at a rate quicker than the other. The impact of a lot of technologies has really come to bear in the last, you know, 5 to 10 years on society. And we see a lot of those impacts in a variety of ways. I think the responsibility for understanding how our products and services, ways of thinking, ways of knowing each other, right, through, you know, digital connectivity, are things that we're just not very familiar with. We just don't know. We've invented all this stuff and now we have like a whole box full of toys and we're just going to go out and play with them randomly and not have any idea what we're really doing with them. And we can sort it out as a group of 8 billion people. And I'm not sure that anything's really worked well with 8 billion people sort of trying to all do it together. So I think that our responsibility is even more than it was. And I think people are taking it really seriously, right? As seriously as we can. So I think people are doing it. Have we gotten better at representing some of those issues? I don't know. Maybe in some ways we have. I think people are starting to, you know, reach out. I do a lot of writing. I know writing is not the best way to get things done. So, I mean, people have been really reaching out, you know, graphic novels and videos and podcasts and video casts, right? And things like this, you know, finding other ways to connect, finding other ways to share knowledge, information, and sort of just inspire and if at all possible. I think that it remains our work in large part. I'm heartened, for example, there was a person I was talking to the other day as a designer. He had not heard of Epic. And I, you know, told him about Epic, sent the links. And he wrote back and goes, hey, this sounds like a really inspirational group. And he got that just from the website, right? I didn't have to say anything. I was pretty happy about that, actually, right? You know, another person found the community and found a place where their diverse background is welcomed and brought in, right? And part of that conversation.
One of the things that really struck me about your talk was it had a through line of optimism, but also an expression of some untapped opportunity. And I actually remember this from the talk, Tony, because we're taking it away. This is 2007, a long time ago. Like, wow, we've got these pockets of people, for example, doing ethnographic work in healthcare. Like, why aren't we talking to each other? And then they're, you know, and making things out of this collective knowledge. How do you think we're doing there? Because you talked about creating new products, new structures, new meaning that can be powerful. How do you think we're doing there?
I think they're not doing as well as we could. This is a little bugaboo for me, and anybody who knows me will know. I think that, so your example of healthcare, I think you should do a Cold Spring Harbor kind of thing with healthcare and bring those people together. I think that's what Epic should be doing. I think we should do that across the board in a variety of things. I think we should be inviting people to come to these conversations who aren't necessarily a part of Epic, right? Other academics or other critics or other folks that actually have things to say about this space where we can actually learn and exchange. I totally support the Scott Page model of diversity, right? Sort of this people who can have a conversation together, but don't necessarily come from the same disciplines, right? You know, he's demonstrated that it works, that it's valuable, that we get to solutions better, that we open up different spaces and have those conversations. So, I mean, he's demonstrated mathematically, right? Sort of it's a mathematical thing, right? The idea of being able to have those conversations to me is, I think, really valuable. I think that it's very hard. And I recognize this from even the very early days when I said, hey, we as Epic should be doing a whole thing as Epic, right? Kind of thing. And it's hard. People have jobs. They have, you know, companies that pay them to do those jobs. There's not necessarily funding for, you know, ethnographers to come together or, you know, the Epic community folks to come together and, you know, have a random conversation about healthcare just to see where it might go, right? And but I think that that is actually really valuable and really necessary. And the, you know, the early part and the early to mid part of the 20th century makes that clear. Right, that people who are at the leading edge of the work they're doing, coming together and having conversations in the context of resolving something, often do, right? Or they inspire that solution subsequently, right? And, you know, Bell Labs did it, Cold Spring Harbor did. I mean, there's all these people that have done that work. We aren't taking the time to do that. We just aren't, right? The academic institutions aren't taking the time to do that when they actually probably should. I don't know all the ins and outs of why. I feel that that's something we should be doing.
There's a little optimism too in there, what you were saying too. So I appreciate that. Rick, anything you want to add to what Tony was just talking about?
Oh, it made me think that there's something there to go to a foundation with, right? Hey, we've been thinking about this for a while and we know that there are some things to do. My initial response was the same, was like, no, we're not doing nearly as good on that part as we are on the sort of theory and method part. So what does this mean? How do we turn this into meaningful action? That definition of praxis. There's not as much of a through line. There's not as much of a, you know, a vector heading somewhere. Starting with particular disciplines or starting with particular areas where really good progress was made out of a couple studies, or there's a, you know, a really good consultancy who's doing really focused work in something. I think there have been opportunities and kind of hard to keep the momentum behind some of those. That's been a missed opportunity. It would be nice if it was emerging from the writing, but I think for some reason that's also hard.
That would be an interesting marker to me where, you know, folks can actually have those conversations, whether they work for this think tank thing or they're a part of it in some way. I mean, I'm thinking a little bit like Data and Society and, you know, that organization. You know, they sort of did a thing. It's very focused. There's people that are there. They have papers that come out. They have state, you know, positions that they put out. And people sort of come to them and ask them questions, right? I think there's something to that. I do. And this is not my forte, you know, figuring out, like, I don't know, how do you actually sort that out and raise money to do it? But that is a thing that I'm sure there are people in Epic who are very, very good at this and could do something really nice there. I do think that there's something to be said. And the reason I say that is because many of the stories that we tell ourselves in Epic, right, in the Pechacuchas and stuff, and in our just our conversations, are stories that other people find really interesting. They're stories about people out in the world doing people things, right? And then sometimes not even people things. And you know, you tell your friends about them and your friends go like, that's kind of cool. You kind of have a cool job. And like, all right, if I'm telling you about my work and you're saying that's kind of cool, there's maybe an audience there. Right. At least, you know, from my point of view. And, you know, and the other side of that is I actually had a hard time explaining what I did in the beginning because, you know, didn't have a name. And a friend of mine said, you should just say you're a lawyer. Everybody thinks they know what they are. And no one wants to hear what it is. So it's perfect. Right. But the other side of it is like, no, this is really interesting. We have good stories. We have good stuff. Right. And we can say things with insight and depth and questions that put people in a spot to have to think about what it is they're doing. I think that's actually really valuable.
This is really interesting. What kind of advice would you give someone who's just entering this conversation? Every year at Epic, we get people, you know, new either career switchers or people who are just starting out.
I'll read the bios of as many of the people who are going to be at Epic this year as you can. The joy of figuring out that all these people had equally weird career trajectories to your own. They have to tell you three different things that they used to do before they get to what they do now. That's always something that should make you really open up to what's going on at something like this. Actually, go to the paper sessions, even though, you know, I'm sure it's more fun to say like, oh, we'll just blow that session off and go to fun ones and meet for dinner later. There's so much that's available there and it goes by so fast.
Tony, what about you? What kinds of advice would you give?
I think one of the things that I would say is that I think that all of our work has an easier pathway to be compassionate about the people we're working with and to have compassion for the people we're working with and to think about, you know, benefits and harms for the kinds of products that we actually make. So, you know, sort of being really compassionate in our work is something I might say for just any practitioner. For Epic, per se. I've, in addition to sort of wanting these little Cold Spring Harbor like things, that drag queen thing was awesome, right? And it wasn't just awesome because it was a drag queen thing. It was awesome because it was meaningful to Epic at that moment. It was a situation that took us out of our little world and put us in another little world, right? And we were there together and we were having fun. And it was one of the more memorable things that I've done at Epic because of that. So I might argue that while I agree with Rick to go to the paper sessions, I might argue to have fewer paper sessions and more drag queen reviews, right? Just because I think it helps to build that network, right? You're having fun with people doing things that's meaningful to us in a way that's not our regular work. So it helps us think a little bit differently about how we're going about doing our work and what does it mean to do that work? What does it mean to actually engage with people out in the world and to do that with ourselves? And we learn from each other. We learn from the kinds of questions people ask. We you know, just in random half-drunk situations. I mean, we just learn from that. And it's not something we're going to get regularly. So that might be I might actually advocate for that.
Nice. I've been to every single Epic. I feel like the first 6 or 7 years, there was this weird undertone of who belongs here. No one intended that, obviously. I'd like to think that's not there anymore. You might not have been in recent Epics, but to me, that feels like an interesting kind of progress. We come from this massive diversity of backgrounds. Maybe we embrace that friction. So I don't know if you have any thoughts on that interesting evolution from like this sense that people felt that there was this carving out of who belonged and who didn't.
I think that you're right. I think initially it was a little bit like who's in and who's out, but I think we were also thinking about that ourselves, right? I think that's what Rick was saying in the beginning as well. That you know, are we academics? Are we not academics? Are we practitioners? And, you know, what hat do we wear? What identity do we have? You know, this was all before, you know, the internet really took off, right? Social media really took off. So, you know, there's a sense of like what you wrote and what your papers were and what company you worked for was a big part of your identity. And now that's sort of opened up a little bit to where people's identities are much more diffuse, right? In the sense of multiple companies or gigs or different kinds of work that they do and that kind of thing. There is a lot more room for people to have a variety of these conversations, and snootiness isn't going to cut it anymore. So I think you're right. I hadn't thought of it, but I don't get a sense of snootiness at all, or even of in or out. It's like, hey, if you got something to contribute, you're in, right? You know, if an astrophysicist decided, you know, he or she wanted to sort of like join up with Epic, I think we might have some questions. Like, you know, you're not going to get a lot of astro or physics here, just so you know, but you're welcome, right? I don't think we would say no.
I had forgotten it, but as soon as you said that, Martha, it was like, oh God, yeah, that was definitely a whole thing. Like, who were we worried about? I know that some of it was the more self-contained, intensely academic, long papers. It's like, why are you doing this here when we're supposed to be trying to have a conversation? Like, okay, thanks, but we're not really going to like buy you a beer for doing that. Maybe that eventually just ended up having a long-term selective effect on the community. But yeah, that was, I know that was funny.
It's also really cool that you said that, Martha. I think that's really cool. I think that's a really nice observation. That's really sweet.
And thank you both for this wonderful conversation. I look forward to seeing you in Epic's future.
It was great talking to Martha. Great talking to Rick.
Yes. Thanks, Martha. It was great. Tony, good to see you as always.
Thanks for listening. As everything with Epic, this series could not have been done without an amazing effort from volunteers and a small but mighty Epic team. Thanks go to the Epic People Reflections podcast team, Dustin Cascaden, Elizabeth Haywood, Evan Hanover, Marta Kachurian-Zapan, and Martha Cotton. To learn more about Epic, attend the conference in LA from August 18th to the 21st, and to learn about other ways to be involved in our community, please go to 2024.epicpeople.org. Thanks.